This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
In the Guardian newspaper on the 21st of March, we find this headline, "Carbon Emission Release Rate Unprecedented in the Past 66 Million Years." It then says, "Researchers calculate that humans are pumping out carbon 10 times faster than at any point since the extinction of the dinosaurs." So to understand what the staggering situation means, we go to a new paper published the same day in the journal Nature Geoscience. The title is "Anthropogenic Carbon Release Rate, Unprecedented During the Past 66 Million Years." The lead author is Dr. Richard E. Zeeby. He's published or co-authored about 75 scientific papers since the 1990s, so I think we can call him an expert in his field. Richard is a professor at the School of Ocean and Earth Science and Technology at the University of Hawaii. From Honolulu, Richard Zeeby, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi.
There's so much to discuss here, but before we look at what we know and how, is it fair to say this research tosses our human experiment with the atmosphere into a whole new game, really?
I guess we have for a long time suspected that if you go further back for quite a while, it's very difficult to find an analog or a situation of a case study which is close to what humans are currently doing. So if the important thing about our current CO2 emissions into the atmosphere It's not only the concentrations of the total amount, but what is really staggering is the rate at which we're doing it. And what we're trying to find in our geologic records are examples or case studies that would help us to learn better for the future. And what we know at this point is that the event that might be most closest to our current release is at least 56 million years old, and it happened at the Paleocene-Eocene boundary. And if we go back to this event, we are relatively certain that over this long period of time, the only example we can actually find that has the most relevance, during which a large amount of carbon was released and at a relatively, say, geologically speaking, at a relatively high rate. And that's 56 million years ago.
Yeah, I know in the headline in The Guardian, it said 66 million years. And I think many of our listeners would think we were going to talk about an asteroid and the end of the dinosaurs. But really, your focus is on this hottest spot that we know about since then, which is about 10 million years closer to us.
That's correct. And the reason why we're focusing on this event is because we know that at the 56 million year event, there was a large amount of carbon released into the atmosphere or into the surface system, whereas 66 million years ago, at the end of the dinosaurs, a lot of things happened which really complicate the whole picture. But in terms of comparing it to our current CO2 emissions, the best example we can find is the Paleocene-Eocene boundary, 56 million years ago.
Well, you know, Richard, I've had a couple of scientific guests who describe relatively rapid global heating, say in 50 years or less, but they're always talking about a time when we move from massive glaciation towards a warmer period. But this PETM, as we've called it, that was a spike in global temperature when Earth was already ice-free. Is that true?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, the Arctic was already ice-free, and yet the temperature went up. Do we know by how much?
The global temperature estimates of surface temperature increase during the PETM have been estimated at about 500 degrees Celsius. If you go to higher latitudes, which are often warm more intensively than the lower latitudes, you find some estimates of higher global warming, but so as a global average, it was in the order of 5 degrees Celsius.
Which is far, far higher than what was considered dangerous at the Paris Peace Agreements or at the Paris Climate Agreements.
That's correct.
Do we know how fast temperatures rose in the period that you studied?
Right. So this is what essentially the core question of our paper. We're trying to find out over what period of time did this 5 degrees temperature increase happen. And what we find in our paper is that the carbon release and the temperature rise, so the climate change, essentially happened over more or less the same period of time. And so we can now estimate that the entire, what we call the onset of the event, the start of the PETM, took in the order of 4,000 years or longer. Now, for comparison, mankind has been releasing greenhouse gases over a timescale of centuries or less so far since we see the largest effect of our emissions. So there's a big difference in terms of the timescale and as a result of the rate at which we're putting CO2 in the atmosphere as compared to the event 56 million years ago.
Do we know where that carbon came from 55 million years ago?
The best candidate is still methane hydrates from the seafloor. So we also have these hydrates at the moment in deep sea sediments. And these hydrates, these are essentially, this is ice. And in this ice, there's methane included. And if you warm up the ice, you can melt the hydrates and release the methane, which then gets oxidized very rapidly into carbon dioxide. We have seen this during the recent Gulf spill, where methane was oxidized very rapidly to CO2 already in the water column. And the release then of the CO2 into the atmosphere causes a large greenhouse effect. So one of these of the candidates of where the carbon came from are methane hydrates from the seafloor. Other hypotheses include additional terrestrial carbon that can be released from the biosphere once the planet warms up.
Richard Deeby, how can we possibly know the carbon emissions so many million years ago?
Right, and this was a tricky part of our paper. That's why we focused and essentially developed a new method to figure this out. So if you look at a radiometric dating, we can essentially date events in terms of their absolute age with a certain error margin. And we can say, you know, relatively confidently the PETM happened about 56 million years ago. But what we're talking about now are timescales of the order of 1,000 years. And you can't use simply radiometric dating. Is not possible to date timescales of the order of a few thousand years. And essentially in our paper, we have developed a new method to come down to this sort of timescale, and that enabled us to conclude that the onset, the start of the event, took in the order of 4,000 years or more.
Where did you get your samples, and how do you treat them to measure this carbon heating event?
So in this study, we combined two methods. One method essentially looks at chemical compositions of the actual sediments. And the data that we're using in our paper comes from sediments cores that were drilled on the New Jersey margin. But we have combined these measurements with carbon cycle and climate modeling. And the trick that we describe in our paper is that we're trying to replicate with our climate models and carbon cycle models what we see in the sediments. And we can only get this, or we can only replicate the data that has been measured when we include or release the carbon in our models and stretch the input over a timescale of 4,000 years or more.
I'm trying to picture what that hothouse world looked like so long ago. Could you take a minute or two to just describe what it was?
So the Earth, as you said, was warmer already before the event to begin with. And during the event, the whole planet or the surface warmed up by another 5 degrees. So there are studies and some estimates that it was as warm as allowing to have crocodiles and palm trees around the Arctic. So it was a really different and warm place during the PETM. And one of the striking features of this event is, what we looked in our paper was the onset of the event. What we still don't exactly understand is how the event could take so long. And so once the planet had warmed up, the duration of this entire global warming event could be in the order of 100,000 years or more. And this is some of the issues that we're trying to figure out, if some of those potential feedbacks that prolong this warming may also be active today.
And what happened to the plants and animals during that shift to a maxi greenhouse world?
So what we know is that there were substantial animal species migration across the planet. We also know that there were substantial extinctions event in the deep sea. We have deep sea organisms, which we call benthic organisms. They live in the sediment, and these organisms are called foraminifera. And these benthic organisms saw the largest extinction event throughout the entire Cenozoic. However, there is relatively little extinctions on land. So if we compare this, for instance, to the impact that ended the era of dinosaurs, this is at the PETM. There were much less or hardly any extinctions in the terrestrial world.
That's amazing. You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. We're talking with Professor Richard E. Zeeby about a hothouse world millions of years ago and what it could mean for our own future. So, Richard, if the carbon in the atmosphere went so high, what about ocean acidification? How does that relate to our current state of the ocean?
This is one of the important implications that comes out of our study. So it is relatively straightforward chemistry that the extent of ocean acidification and the impact on calcifying organisms is directly proportional to the amount of carbon you put in the system, but also to the rate. So the faster you add the carbon to the atmosphere, which then gets absorbed into the ocean, the larger will be the extent of acidification. And now that we actually, based on our paper, we can make a comparison between the rate at which carbon went into the system 56 million years ago and the rate at which carbon is being released into the system at the present, we can only conclude that the effects on ocean acidification and on calcifiers will be more severe in the future because we're doing it much faster than at the event 56 million years ago.
Now, you've touched on this, and perhaps we don't have an answer yet, but did you find anything we would call an abrupt climate shift, say within the 100 years we're now experiencing?
At the moment, it is not easy to get accurate records down to, say, the order of 100 years. As far as we can tell from our records at the moment is that the transition from the warm climate to a really hot climate over a few thousand years seemed to be relatively smooth. But that is, of course, or unfortunately, no guarantee for the future because of the different speeds at which the planet warmed up at this time versus the present.
Okay, Richard Zeeby, please tell us what was different in that ancient world that would not apply to conditions today.
Yeah, one of the important differences is that before this event started, that we call the Paleocene era, there was essentially little or no ice sheets on the planet. And the feedbacks that ultimately then caused the planet to warm in response to greenhouse gas forcing triggers a number of feedbacks. And one of the feedbacks that, for instance, we have today are these ice sheets, which have to do with the reflection of sunlight, but also, once they disintegrate, with a substantial sea level rise. So one of the things that we need to be concerned in terms of the longer-term future is the effect of our carbon releases on ice sheets and, as a result, sea level. If you look at many reports, including the IPCC reports and many scientific papers, a large number of projections for the future essentially end in the year 2100. And I always think, well, the world doesn't end in 2100. This is only two generations from today. So if we look a little bit further, say over several centuries into the future, this is when we're really going to see much larger effects of, say, for instance, sea level rise than during the next few decades. And what we learn from these ancient events is that, if anything, it is possible that we're still underestimating the long-term consequences of our fossil fuel burning.
And in your conclusions, you and your co-authors talk about a no-analog state. What do you mean?
If we look into the past, we're trying to find analogs or case studies that may help us to better predict the future. And we would be very happy if we could find a carbon release event in the more recent past to which we could compare the present. But unfortunately, as we point out in our paper, even if you go 56 million years back into the past, that event was still slower in terms of CO2 rise than at our present release. And what it means is that there is a potential for surprises, of course, because unfortunately we don't have a good case study that would tell us in the next 100 years or 200 years exactly this will happen. So this is what we mean by no analog. At least in the, as far as we can tell, over 66 million years, we don't have a really good analog for the future, which is not surprising because there haven't been any humans on the planet before us, as far as we can tell.
One reading of your new paper that I got is that perhaps we've been lulled to sleep by earlier paleoclimatology. We looked back at ice cores, for example, and decided climate change is a long, drawn-out process, so we have time to change our energy systems and adapt. But you've said this research uncovers, quote, a fundamental challenge in constraining future climate projections. Can you elaborate further on that, Richard?
The fundamental challenge for climate change prediction essentially is that most of the models, and I'm not criticizing climate models here because we are using them ourselves. They are good tools as far as we can tell. But they are usually tuned or gauged by the climate system as far as we know it from the more recent past. Some of these climate models include now case studies from the past to better tune the model also to rapidly changing conditions. But there is a question of whether or not these tools that we're using are capable of predicting climate changes that are happening so rapidly.
What's been the reaction to the publication of your paper?
it's pretty amazing. This paper has generated a lot of interest. National Geographic has reported, BBC, The Guardian, NSF, the Natural Science Foundation had a press release. My phone has been ringing quite a while, and I got lots of emails, phone interviews, so it's pretty remarkable.
Well, at some point, as you worked on the paper, you must have developed your own personal reaction. Are you worried that we are creating an experiment with fossil fuel burning?
Well, I have been worried about this so-called experiment for a long time. And for many of my colleagues, much of what we're writing the paper does not come as a surprise. And what is, I mean, because you mentioned experiment, I really would like to say that we are scientists. We are setting up experiments in order to make a controlled study of something that we can, say, control in the laboratory. I really, and I know this is a very common thing to say, we are essentially conducting experiments with the Earth. This is not what we're doing. We're essentially just releasing, without any control, greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, and we see what happens. That's not a really controlled experiment. And so, yes, I am worried. And this is one of the conclusions that comes out of our paper. If we look into these geologic records, many of these records essentially have climate sensitivities, which tell us how much the Earth warmed for the amount of carbon release, that are mostly at the upper end of IPCC projections. And so there is a possibility that at least in the long term, we may be underestimating climate change. But as I said, myself and many of my colleagues are not terribly surprised because we have been looking at these records for decades.
This rather stunning new research paper is titled Anthropogenic Carbon Release Rate Unprecedented During the Past 66 Million Years. It was published in the journal Nature Geoscience on March 21st, 2016. We've been speaking with the lead author, Professor Richard E. Zeeby, from the Department of Oceanography at the University of Hawaii, Manoa. Richard, thank you for taking the time to explain this for us.
Sure.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Radio EcoShock.